T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Hey, good morning. Doug Sinteri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. Give us a call, 260-1870. And we have, good morning, Albert.
Hey, Doug, good morning. What's going on?
Nothing much. Just a hot August day without NFL preseason. Everything's going good. And so we're sort of weird. We would normally have, I think, the NFL Hall of Fame game this week. That would be this first football game, but they're starting training camp, and it's sort of in a vacuum because you just don't know what's sort of happening, and it's going to be hard. Well, it's going to be hard to figure out or know what players are really, what rookies are coming on, which ones are meeting expectations, which ones aren't, what are the surprises. It just sort of be a different deal, you know, this year. I think when the Saints open up against Tampa Bay, it'll be like, okay, what's happening here? You know, there's no build. I don't say build up, but there's no, you know, Marcus Colston's you saw in a couple of preseason games saying, hey, that guy looks pretty good, or Pierre Thomas's, or you know, or disappointments with, you know, for high picks, or saying, you know, they're really not performing like the way they are. We're just gonna find out, I guess, in September.
Yeah, it's probably a lot different for the players too. You know, just being quarantined and not knowing what's next.
Now, really, under the traditional training camps they used to have, like in West Virginia, back in the old days in Dodgertown, they were in essence quarantined, like in a camp setting. In other words, I guess that's not totally different, but you know, just not, you know, not having, thinking their first game's going to be in, heck, what, 5 weeks. It's just sort of a different deal. I would sort of like them to go to, you know, when we get out of this, which will be next year, you know, for every, to have a preseason of 2 games and play 18 games, and I think that may happen after this year, because I think they're going to realize that 4 preseason games is probably overkill.
Yeah, my guess is they'll cut it to 2.
And then, you know, whether they go to 18 games or 16 games is a, you know, sort of a different deal. But it'll sort of be interesting. And before I go to the Pelicans, the first game in the history of the Superdome was played this day in 1975, which was 45 years ago. The Saints opened up the preseason against the Houston Oilers, and they lost 13-7, but that was the first football game played in the Superdome. Did you go to that game?
I did not.
Sort of a weird sensation. You know, it's just,
I was
like
there for Archie's first game against the Rams. I was there for that, but I wasn't there for
that. That was Tulane Stadium. That's when that was 1971, when they beat the Rams, and it was 3 seconds left, and it was first down, and they had one play left, and they decided to do a sweep with Archie going to the left.
Archie scored.
Go ahead.
They were walking out singing Super Bowl, Super Bowl, Super Bowl. Super Bowl.
On that play, he did fumble the ball as he got hit at the goal line, but they still called it a touchdown, if you remember that.
No instant replay.
No, thank goodness. That was one time the Saints were lucky.
So, you know, we have a lot of tuna sports art in our one of our conference rooms, right?
Yes.
From Tuna Cipher. Well, yes. Tuna's brother Richie and I were good friends from St. Dominic way back when I lived in New Orleans before moving across the lake. And Richie's dad was a sports writer.
Yeah, he was a district attorney, assistant district attorney, and a sports writer for Times-Picayune.
Yes, he was. And so he had two extra tickets to that game. So Richie and I, Richie invited me, and, you know, he was, I guess, in the he was in the booth, and so Richie and I sat there and watched the game. It was a lot of fun. And I remember, you know, walking out the game, everybody singing Super Bowl, Super Bowl. And Archie was exciting. He was you know, played every play hard and you know, a real wow. competitor always.
Yes. Well, Archie was sort of like an anomaly because he could do everything. Especially at Ole Miss. If you see the old films at Ole Miss when he played, he was just, you know, running back, you know, backwards. He's running sideways. He was, you know, sort of crazy legs and a real anomaly and because he could do everything. And
yeah.
So, and
yeah,
also, I have to do a correction, too. Last week, we talked about on August 2nd, the Saints' first preseason game ever occurred in in Anaheim. And the Saints played the Los Angeles Rams and lost 16-7. And so I text Bill Becknell, and I got to correct Bill. And I saw he said that the only touchdown was Billy Kilmer to Les Kelly, who was the first-round pick out of Alabama, who was a converted linebacker to fullback. And then I was in a Michelle loves the antique shop. So I was in the antique store looking for something to do. And then I saw a book by Wayne Mack. It's called The Saga of the Saints that was written in 1990 and for their 25th anniversary. So I looked it up. And the Saints' first touchdown was thrown by Gary Wood, according to that book, and not Billy Kilmer. So Bill's listening. I have to check that out.
So Billy Kilmer was the first quarterback?
Well, they had three quarterbacks going into
Gary
camp.
Quazzo.
They had three quarterbacks going into the first Saints camp. It was Gary Wood. He was from New York Giants. Gary Quazzo from the Minnesota Vikings. Or Baltimore Colts. He was coming from the Baltimore Colts. I think he played behind Johnny Unitas. And then they had Billy Kilmer. So they had a three-man battle in training camp. And Billy Kilmer won the job eventually. But it might have been Gary Wood who threw that first touchdown August 2nd. Bill was there. He was the manager on sidelines for the Saints. But I saw a picture of Gary Wood throwing a pass, and they said in that, according to Wayne Mack, it was Gary Wood. Now, for you millennials, Wayne Mack was one of the premier, I guess, personalities in New Orleans TV history. Him, Hap Claude.
Not just sports. He was the great McNutt.
He was the great McNutt, which was the like a little kid show, and also Wayne was he was in the Three Stooges movie. I think the last Three Stooges movie with Adam West.
With Curly Joe.
Yes, with Curly Joe. I mean, I never thought the Stooges were, you know, after the original Curly, I mean, nothing could top the original Curly.
Yeah, yeah.
The
movies we have our fantasy football league, and it's the Stooges of fantasy football. And so there are three divisions, the Curly, Larry, and Moe division. And if you win the Stooge Bowl. If you lose, you get the Shemp Award. So that just goes to show you how.
That's right. Going from Curly to Shemp was a little.
About Shemp versus Curly, right?
Now, did you know Shemp was Moe's brother? Did you know that?
Yes.
You knew that.
And Larry.
They saw
it.
So was Curly.
Shemp and Curly was too.
Yeah, Shemp, Curly, and Moe were brothers.
Right.
Yeah.
And then Larry Fine was the odd man out. He was
right. He was the odd man. So that's probably You millennials, I guess they wouldn't show the Stooges today, except maybe because some of the stuff, I guess, you know, some college professor will find something wrong with it and say, you know, it's offensive to them or something like that. So
too violent.
Too violent. Yeah. The violence, that would be number one, and especially yeah. among themselves. So,
right.
So, but anyway, you could look it up on YouTube probably. They probably hadn't banned it just yet, so it's just pretty funny. So anyway, and also, you know, it's interesting. The Pelicans are 2-3. Now, I was thinking about last week when you the Pelicans blew a big lead in their first game against the Jazz. They were down 16 points. And I was thinking, oh, my goodness. Albert, mm-hmm. so you sort of have Alvin Gentry in the same class as Les Miles as far as coaching. Is that? And now they're actually talking about suggesting, well, maybe there will be a coaching
change. Yeah, the word is Jason Kidd might be the front runner, is the rumor I'm hearing.
Jason Kidd or Tyronn Lue. So mm-hmm. they were, mm-hmm. yeah. They just you just don't know what you're going to get each week, and it also too, it's sort of I've talked to some people, and I don't want to get into the politics of the politics, but the fact that politics has been brought into professionals, you know, into basketball, has turned off a lot of I think local people, and
yes, it has. And, yes, it has.
You know, I think one of the things about sports, which I think they're going to find out with lower ratings and less interest, is people watch professional sports to get away from what goes on from Monday to Friday, and then to enjoy something that isn't, you know, that you know, it's like turning on the news and saying, "Oh my goodness, you know, I'm watching a ball game," and it's like watching the 5:30 news, and I think it's sort of having a real effect on people's enthusiasm as far as making it, if it's on, it's on TV, but I think it affects it in a way where it's not a destination thing, where people, you know, come home from work and say, okay, the Pelican's going to be on at 7:00, let's plan around that. I think people are like, right. Yeah, you know, I
know many, many people that have gotten rid of their Saints tickets. They traded them in and said, we're done. Yeah. Many, many, many people. And so it's just it's a bad mistake, I think, to run this way. Look, you know, it's the Black Lives Matter. I think you ask anyone, you know, whatever race, and they would agree, of course, that Black Lives Matter. You know, but I hear that from people that, you know, listen, I love ice cream, but if you force feed it to me, I'm going to throw it up. And I think that's kind of how a lot of people are reacting to this. Like, you know, why are we thrust in the middle of this political thing? We just want to watch a football game. We want to watch a basketball game.
I think football is about pride of your city, watching, you know, 53 athletes pull together, you know, for something bigger than themselves, work together. And, you know, all the best things about what makes, you know, what makes a country, you know, what makes people great, country great, you know, doing the best they can, dedication, discipline, working together, teamwork, and watching that, you know, and playing for, you know, a city that's bigger than yourself. And it's just, I hope maybe this year they'll let everybody get it out of the system, but, you know, you just keep it, you know, it's just people watch football to get away and entertain themselves. And if the feeling of, oh my goodness, I'm watching the news in the middle on a Sunday afternoon brings that back up, it's just a lot of people are going to say, hey, I'm, you know, it just emotionally, it sort of cuts that connection a little bit. All right, hear the music. Let's go to a break. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers. We'll get to law right after this brief timeout. Hey, we're back. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico. A couple of things. We talked about, and we're going to get off sports, when the Saints played Houston in the first game in the Superdome in 1975 on this date, August 9th. The coach of the Oilers was newly hired Bum Phillips. So that's a little trivia for you there. Also wanted to talk about, we were sort of keeping track of all the lawsuits regarding the mask. And I think last week Janice Clark, a judge in Baton Rouge, a 19th Judicial District Court. There's a lawsuit filed by four businessmen in Jefferson Parish saying that the mask was unconstitutional, illegal, and Janice Clark denied a temporary restraining order. There's also, I think, two lawsuits in federal court, one in the Middle District in Lafayette, which I think it's working its way up on the same issue. And so I think they were looking for injunctive relief. I don't think they have heard that one yet. So that's that. But, you know, it's the interesting thing, Albert. In California, churches are closed. So you know what they're doing in California and Nevada? They're starting to hold church services in Walmarts and casinos because you can. That's a pretty clever idea. So they said you're not allowed to have church services in California. And they said so the church has started organizing and holding their services in Walmart and a casino. So that's sort of an interesting juxtaposition.
Yeah, well, that's okay. Always been crazy. You know, what's essential, what's not essential, and what can open.
Right. So I guess it's the priorities. I guess the priorities. This is we got. I only say this because we have a big church going audience, because a lot of people are going to and from church as they listen to us. So I thought they might be interested. So thank goodness we're not close to church here. Otherwise, we'd be having services at Harris. Let's go to phone line. Let's go to Wayne. Hey Wayne, you and all things legal with Doug Sincere and Albert Nico.
Yes, I have some succession problems in Louisiana.
Sure.
My mama died about 10 years now, and my brother was living in a house, and he died last year. But we have like four pieces of property. Two of them is in her family's name, one in her daddy's name and one in her mama's name, and two pieces of property is in her name. Now, how far back do we have to go for succession to...
All the way. You have to. So in Louisiana, you have a chain of title, right? We don't necessarily have deeds. It's a chain of title that is recorded in the clerk's office records, and so in the mortgage and conveyance office. So what you have to do is establish that chain of title. So if anybody currently alive wants to establish ownership of that property, they're going to have to do your grandparents' succession, and then your mother's succession, and then they will be placed in possession. And so even if you just list that one piece of property as the property in the grandparent succession, just to have it converted over to the mom and then to you, then the same thing, your brother, you know, you're going to have to do your brother's succession. I'm assuming he had no children, no spouse.
No children, no spouse, no. But wait,
and
now.
How many siblings?
Eight of us all together. I had seven brothers and one sister.
And they're all alive?
No, all is left is me, my brother, and my sister. And my sister is on the verge of Alzheimer's, but her daughter has of attorney. Can we just open my mom's succession and my brother's succession to cover up her piece of property? Or do we have to go all the way?
I think the best thing to do would be to go all the way, because now, you know, I would think that if your siblings that are deceased had children, they may have opened the succession for their, you know, for their parents, you know, your brothers and sisters. So hopefully that's done to where the only thing you would have to do is amend that judgment of possession. You just file a petition to amend that judgment of possession to add that piece of property once that chain of title has come down to them. So it's pretty complicated. You know, they got
it,
especially
is, yes.
Like in country parishes where, you know, five people owned a piece of property that were siblings and they all had children and then grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and now the property's all divided up into a million little strips, or, you know, everybody's all part of this. And so... Yeah, unfortunately, I think you're going to have to do the whole thing to get a clear title.
I can't do it. I can't do just my mama's succession.
No. Not legally. No.
Well, you can do your mom's succession, right? And you can do your mom's succession, but it's only going to render those two pieces of property that are in her name valid, you know, when you have an interest in it. But then if she's got parents that had some property, then the chain of title's got to go from them to your mom to you and your siblings, and not just your siblings, and now your siblings' children since they're deceased.
But can we just let them other two pieces of property go to tax sales or something? And because I don't want to get that. I mean, she had a large family, too. And we don't want to get all them people involved. Can I just leave them other two go to tax or something?
It take a couple of years. Theoretically, you can. Nobody pays the taxes.
We're not interested in the taxes. My sister had been paying it. My mama was paying it when she died. My brother was paying it, and he died. And now my sister was paying it, but she don't want it. Her sons don't want her to pay it no more because it's lagging on and on and on. So we'll just let them two pieces of property clear up my mama's side. Can we do that?
You know what? Is there any value to that property at all? Because it may be worth placing you in the possession of that property and then selling it to the remaining family members on your mom's side. You know, just you got to weigh the cost on it if it's so minimal. But if it's got some value, it may be worth doing that and then letting other family members on that side of the family kind of buy y'all's interest out. And then that way, you know, you get something out of the deal, right?
Well, we really don't care about those other two pieces of property because they're so old and it's only two different lots. It's not a big acreage or nothing. It's just... My sister wants to clear up my mama's part of it.
Yeah. And, well, you know, you could always do a quit claim, you know, where you just relinquish any interest you have into that property and then... you know, do a quit claim in favor of any other members and, you know, let them, if they want it, then they can pay to have that done. It shouldn't be a real expensive property, a prop process. And then that way you're out for their purposes, you know, and so it cleans it up for their sake. If they don't want to do it, then just quit paying the taxes and be done with it. But if, you know, if they bring it up to you, hey, look, where's your share of the taxes? Say, look, we don't want it anymore. We'll be happy to do a quit claim. Why don't y'all get a lawyer to prepare that, and we'll go ahead and sign off on it and relinquish our rights to that property. And then that way, you know, they can have it, and it's a little cleaner on their side. And if they don't want to do it, just say, look, you know, it can go to taxes as far as we're concerned. We can, you know, get sold to at a tax sale.
So to clear up my mama's piece, is it very expensive to open a succession on her side?
It shouldn't be. I mean, you know, you could probably do it all at once, at least your mom's side, and, you know, and get that done. And then your grandparents, right, if that's the property you're really not interested in. So if your mom's property, you open up that succession, you did put a property description, you trace that chain of title, and then you and your siblings get placed in possession of it. And again, assuming your siblings who are deceased have had a succession and their children have been placed in possession, then it would, you know, then that chain of title will be able to trace right to them. And then, you know, at that point, because there's so many people, you can put it up for sale or form an LLC, you know, if there's some value to the property and it's income producing. And then that way you can just vote, you know, you can vote interest. And if it's sold, you would just sell the LLC.
Well, that's not really that much value in it. My mama's house is over there. I've been living in there. I'm 73, and I was living in there when I was born. So it's really not in the property. It's an old wooden house, and it's really not in the value. So but they just want to clear up the...
Yeah, you could clear up the title and put it up for sale, and then once it's cleared up, you know, get it sold, and that'll help you bring some of the costs of doing that.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for the call. Give us a call at 504-837-1304 if you got any more questions regarding that. It's sort of a complicated subject, and we'll talk a little bit more about those kind of issues with successions and not opening succession on property. So we'll be right back after this brief timeout on All Things Legal. Stay tuned. Hey, we're back. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. Let's go to the phone lines. We've got Derek's got a question regarding a school contract. Hey, Derek, you on all things legal. Derek. Derek there? One more time. 3, 2, 1. New Derek. You know, Albert, we're talking a little bit about real estate, and we sort of had an interesting issue after Road Home 12 years ago, in order, 13, 14 years ago after Katrina. In order to get Road Home, you had to have the house that you were living in, the title updated. And we had a lot of, you know, had some properties in the city that went through two or three generations, and you had occupants to the house, but there was no successions done when their parents and the parents preceding them had died. And it turned out to be quite an undertaking to trying to identify all the heirs for purposes of updating the title.
No question about that. Yeah, we had lots of issues with that in terms of ownership, who could bring the claim, who had the right to bring even the claim for the hurricane damage. You know, it was same type of thing. And it was a nightmare. And so, you know, people say, oh, you know, do I need to do a succession? You know, if mom dies, dad's still alive, you know, maybe not right away. You know, it obviously is a good idea to do it just to get it cleaned up. But, you know, dad's living in the house. He's elderly. It you know, maybe not. But then, you know, a generation later, or then all of a sudden if a sibling dies and they have children, now all of a sudden, you know, they might want to say, hey, look, you know, we need to clean up our succession for my dad, so we got to have to do grandma's succession now so we can, you know, we can clean things up as to who gets what and the chain of title for especially real estate. Again, people, they got a lot of lawyers out there that are selling these trusts that want to say how expensive probate is, you know, and that's one of their big selling points. And it's just, in the scheme of things, it's just really not that expensive for, you know, for simple successions, for successions where there's a house, there's maybe some assets, and even if it's a rental property or two, it's just not a real expensive process, and it makes
compared to the trust.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I mean, I'm seeing some of these trust prices, you know, exceed $10,000, and it's like for a revocable trust to say, okay, I can just change my mind. I mean, what are we doing this for? You know, and again, we both agree there are certain reasons to do so, but they're not as many as somebody trying to sell you a trust might tell you.
Yeah, well, sometimes a lot of times it's trying to fit a square peg in a round hole, and just generally for estate planning, the first thing you really have to do is listen as a lawyer and say, okay, what do you want to accomplish? And then once you say, okay, this is the most efficient way to do it. And a lot of times, more is not better. I mean, you can do more, but a lot of times just getting from point A to point B efficiently is a lot more practical a lot of times than maybe taking four or five laps around the track before you get to A and B.
And of course, a good lawyer is going to suggest things. You know, I did that yesterday. I had a couple come in. You know, the husband wanted to leave everything to wife and wife vice versa. And then, and they have a few children. And the plan is, of course, to leave everything to the kids when they're both gone. And, you know, I made some suggestions to say, you know, that might not be the best option. And here are a couple of things to determine why, you know. One is the whole Medicaid planning, right? And if you only own half a house, then it affects, if there is some sort of reimbursement claim, it affects how much they can come back after you for.
And also that property can't be redirected later away from the children, if that's your intent to get it.
Well, that's exactly.
Okay, let's go to a break. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers. All things legal. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. Hey, we're back. We got a couple of minutes. We got Derek on the line. He's got a question regarding school contract. Hey, Derek, you on all things legal?
Hey, fellas, how you doing?
Good. What you have for us? Sure.
Yeah, just a friend of mine, a girlfriend, she's a single mom, and she signed a contract for our, you know, her daughter to go to our private school this upcoming year, and she signed it back before COVID happened. And they, I don't know if she financed or was paying all up front, but I know the contract is, you know, that you'll pay the next year's right. school tuition. Well, she's a single mom, and she's, you know, worried about the COVID and doesn't want to send her daughter to school this year. She just wants to, you know, take the year off because she's not really able to do the whole homeschooling. And it's a private school in New Orleans, and it's pretty demanding. And she just wants to kind of put the year off. What are her chances of getting out of that contract, you think?
Well, first of all, you got to look at the contract, see if it contemplates – you know, a force majeure or some type of act of God that would prohibit the performance of the contract. The other two is whether they're going to, there's a couple of considerations, whether they're going to go online or not online. Or if you, if they're going online, one of the issues would be I contracted to have an in-person. I tell you what, Mark, I hear the music, Derek, I hear the music. Do you mind, because this is going to take a little explanation to give you, you know, on this. Do you mind holding on through the break?
No, I can hold on.
And then when we come back in about 10 minutes, we'll address it. Because it's sort of a complicated problem. And most of these contracts that were written, you know, prior to COVID do not contemplate this pandemic. So since it does not, there's going to be a couple of interpretations and arguments on both sides to get out. So it's going to be a gray area, and I think Albert and I would like to address those gray areas on both sides to give some light on that particular issue. All right. Well, we got to go to a news update. We got to go to national news, local news, and then we'll be back in about 10 minutes with Derek's question regarding a very, very good question in light of COVID regarding the school contracts. So we'll see you in about 10 minutes on All Things Legal. Stay tuned for hour number two. Hey, Doug Cesari, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, All Things Legal. Back for hour number two. We'll be on till 10 o'clock. And we had a very good, we have a very good question before the break by Derek. His question was, there was a private school contract of a friend of his, and the mother of the child is electing not to participate in this school year, and she wants her money back. And we sort of discussing that. And Derek, let me ask you a few questions. Is the school going to do online instruction?
Yeah, they do offer that, just like you know, most schools are doing. Like some schools, I know my school, you can either do online or all in, and I know other schools are doing a few days here, and then you can do a few days online at home. I think they offer all that, yeah.
So for this case, you're going to have to look at the particular facts. First of all, you got to read the contract and look at the particular facts. Now, there have been over 100 class action suits against universities seeking refunds for tuition, and it's based on the past year, which is has a similar dynamics if you're doing online education or you're doing an impaired education, because basically the issue is this: you know, what did the student's parents in this case or the student's contract for, and what services are being delivered, and is there some disparity between the two? And so I think, so that's the first question you would have to look at.
They're offering what the contract stipulates. You know, we're offering the school. You can do it at home. You can go there. But with the COVID, you know, she's, you know, she lives with older relatives. She's a single mom. She has pretty good reasons to be a little weary of it. And I didn't get into it with her why she's not getting, you know, has trouble with the online homeschooling. But all I really know is that she just wants to opt out for the year. But, yeah, I know it's all about the stipulations in the contract. Unfortunately, I don't have that in front of me, so I can't give you as much information as I'd like. But
I think that's going to be a very highly factual question, because what you're going to have to do, like if I'm the school, I'm saying, well, there is a inherent risk in contracting COVID in anything you do. Do you grocery shop?
Yeah.
Do you go out in the public? Do you do this? From her perspective, it would be maybe there's more of a chance if I'm exposed to school. So that's sort of a tough question on a case-by-case basis. Now, if you had an issue where the child has a pre-existing condition and has a higher possibility of, you know, contracting, you know, what else does she do? You know, does she do other activities and, you know, that could expose her to COVID?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's in the gray area. Now, I would do is, and as Albert always says, look at the pragmatic solution, you know, prior to going illegal. And I would say, I would just recommend just to have a very frank conversation with the school and say, hey, maybe our situation's different. I am a single mother. Maybe I'm more exposed to more elderly people than, you know, normal. And see if they'll do it amicably. You know, typically, most of the lawsuits against the school have been, look, I paid for an in-person educational experience with extracurricular activities, with you know, extra, you know, clubs. And now I'm only getting online education, which I think is a diminished form of education.
Product.
Yeah. So, therefore, I want a partial or full refund if I don't participate. This is a little different as far as the exposure to COVID, because I think one of the things, you know, there's a lot of lawsuits with employees saying I've been exposed to COVID. And so, therefore, they want to sue for workers' comp. And, you know, one of the defenses is, hey, have you gone to the grocery? Have you gone to Walmart? Have you done this? Well, how do you know that, you know, you
it's causation somewhere issue. Else.
Yeah. So I think it's in the best I could say, this is in the gray area. Could go either way. But And when you had that, those competing factors, it's always better to try to resolve it amicably on something that both sides can live with. Because, you know, if you push the issue, there's going to be a winner.
Like
it's expensive, and there's going to be a winner and a loser.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah. Well, all right. Well, yeah, I'll let her know. You know what you'd say, and obviously it'd be better if she was talking to you. But I just kind of thought about it right around my trucker issue, and I knew that wouldn't be a quick, easy answer, but
no, yeah, that's an excellent. I tell you what, that was an excellent question, and there's, you know, Albert talked about it before. There's a lot of questions like that that have in a lot of different contexts in employment and suppliers and vendors and other services, weddings, venues, and all that sort of thing. So,
if you wanted to take the contract to a lawyer and have them just look it over and and make a recommendation to, would that, you think they charge a lot for that, or would that
charge a couple hundred dollars to take a look at it? Yes.
Yeah, so I figured. Okay, well, I sure appreciate your help, guys.
All right, thanks for the call. Let's go to a break. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, Your Weekend Lawyers, All Things Legal. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. Hey, we're back. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, Your Weekend Lawyers, All Things Legal. We got Justin, who we're going to confer as the honorary beneficiary of the Nico and Sinceri Law Firm Trust. So,
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we thought long and hard about 5 seconds on conferring you this award. So,
That's a very sweet thing to do. That's very sweet.
Yes, I've
talked to you guys so much, we're practically next door neighbors now.
That's true. Except, you know, I respect you not playing your drums during your while we're talking, you know? So.
No, I won't play that till after.
Gotcha. All right. Sounds good.
Wait, first of all, hello, Albert. It's been a while since I talked to you. How you doing?
How are you?
I'm doing well, sir. How are you?
I'm good.
Anyway, Doug, first of all, with you and Doug, you and Michelle, the information y'all gave me last week was so important. But let me tell you the funny part of this. After I got off the phone, Monday, my trustee, I can't remember the term, trustee moderator or captain, whatever it is, she's in charge of the trust. And she calls me, says, she gives me an update on what's going on. And then and at the end of it, she says, oh, by the way, a lawyer is going to send a mailing to you. You have to sign it and notarize it again. Not the same document, but I have to stop what I'm doing when the letter arrives and drive right across town and pay my lawyer to notarize this document. I have no idea what the document is. Let me tell you, it never stops.
Well, that's part of the benefit. Or part of the issues of being a beneficiary. Well, you know, Justin, if you come by me, I'll give you a coupon for one free notary. Okay,
so come on. wait. Yeah. You're the South Shore, aren't you?
I was South Shore, North Shore. We got North Shore office. So either way, I'm
North Shore.
Both sides. Look, I'm non-binary. No, am I binary or non-binary as far as my law offices are concerned? I'm not sure.
Okay.
I think I'm binary, or non-binary. I'm just trying to be. I'm trying to throw some politically correct language at you there, you know.
That's okay. You're doing fine, bud. Doing fine. But anyway, let me finish this call because, you know, I told you this trust is a blessing and a curse. So right now it's being a curse.
That's right. I will say this, Justin. A lot of people would like to have that problem.
I know
as
they
would.
As
far as being a beneficiary of a trust, you know. They say, I'll pay that. I'll deal with that. So. Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Well, but I'm afraid that after all this trip, and for Albert to keep him up to speed, I'm exchanging trustees from one to another, and it's cost me all the money. So by the time the thing is over, I'm going to be broke.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know, every time the trustee sneezes, they get to charge something. So.
Oh, my God.
Or think about
look,
you.
Look, I do feel like my dad left me a blessing, so that's the ultimate goal, right?
Yes. Your dad who went to Notre Dame. I remember that.
He did go to Notre Dame. He did. He went to undergrad, graduate, and law school at the same school.
Oh, my goodness. He must have been sanctified.
He was so proud of his school. I told you, I went to see the campus. And it's beautiful, but he said, Justin, I want you to forget it. I do miss my dad, and he did leave me a blessing. And it's been a problem every so often, but I don't mind driving across to give the judge a little notarized document.
That's all right. You know, I forgot to tell you the story about LSU, and Burt Jones told this story.
Ooh.
That when LSU played Notre Dame in 1971, they came to Tiger Stadium, and probably one of the great games in Tiger Stadium history, LSU won 28-8. But Burt Jones, being from Ruston, his wife was from Opelousas.
And
so what his wife's family had to do was they had to go seek dispensation from the local Catholic priest to find out if it was okay to pull against Notre Dame. Did you know that? It's true that Burt Jones tells that story. So
you millennials,
Burt Jones was John Elway before John Elway. He played at LSU, really? And he played for the Baltimore Colts. So that's just
one more thing. I'll get the phone. I heard you talk about Wayne Mack's book, Saga of the Saints.
Yes, yes.
I read that. That's a great story. And one of his favorite stories is said that if everybody who said that they were at Tom Dempsey's kick at 63 yards, there must have been 800,000 people in the stadium.
That's right. That's right. They had 800,000 people at Tulane Stadium on December 8th, 1970 to witness the Tom Dempsey kick. And actually, one little known fact was Al Wester – was a play-by-play announcer on radio, and
really?
The radio went out during the kick. In other words, they had some type of disruption during the kick, and a lot of people listening to the radio could not hear it live. So that was another caveat. But, you know, Wayne Mack was very, very interesting. First, he was very multi-dimensional.
I remember Wayne Mack. I love Wayne Mack. I remember him. I remember Hat Plotty. God, I remember all of them.
Yes, and Wayne Mack was he was very well read. He was a history buff. I mean, he had very many dimensions to him, and we had a very unique sports. You know, a lot of people in sports. You had Buddy DiLiberto, Hap Gaudy, and you had others.
And had Jim Henderson.
Jim Henderson replaced Hap Gaudy, and I remember coming home from college, listening to sports radio, on radio and WWL and other stations. And I'd have people from out of New Orleans who didn't speak yet, like I did. And he would say, you know, you really need subtitles for your talk radio because I really can't understand what they're saying.
Well, look, let me go to the phones here, the callers. But, hey, Albert, are you still there?
I am here. I'm just listening conversation.
I think it's a great conversation. Let me tell you, you guys are so great. I love you guys. I listen to your show every Sunday religiously. So y'all keep going. God bless you, and I'll talk to you again soon.
Justin, you got a bunch of new notaries. You got a coupon for three now after that one.
Oh, that's so sweet. Well, y'all have a great day.
All right, thanks for the call. Thanks for the call. Yes, well, Justin's father is the great Jack Martell, which we've talked about several times. I sort of switching gears on you, Albert, a little bit. We were talking about I guess, you know, a little bit about real estate and, you know, trust and that sort of thing. One of the things I wanted to ask you is there's, you know, there's a lot of real estate activity, especially in Jefferson Parish. You know, as soon as a house seems like it goes up for sale, it's, you have six or seven bids on it. And, I mean, it's really sort of popping. And one of the things we want to talk about, especially if you're trying to buy a house in Jefferson Parish or anywhere, but is the difference in the two issues is most houses are being sold as is, but there's also a property disclosure that you have to fill out. And that if, even though the house is being sold as is, which means you take it as you, as it is and there's no warranties, you still have some duties in filling out a property disclosure on filling it out correctly, because you still could be liable even if the sale is, you know, without warranty.
And that is the case. Just in any sale in Louisiana, right, under the civil code, if I'm selling something to you, whether it's a house or, you know, a piece of jewelry, or you know, a boat, I am warrantying to you with that sale that the product is fit for its intended purpose. And so if I'm selling you a boat, unless I disclose to you some defects, you should assume that the boat works. Now, granted, the other half of that is you have the right to simple inspection. And so if a defect can be discovered upon simple inspection, then you don't have a right to claim a warranty, because if the boat is missing a motor, or you can see that the head is blown on the motor, the cowl is off, everything else, then, you know, you're not going to be, it's going to put you on notice that there's a problem. And so with that said, most homes are sold with an as-is clause, waiver of retribution. Retribution's a kind of a civil law term that means basically I want to either rescind the sale or I want to purchase it for a reduced price. And so that's a cause of action that you're allowed in the event that there is a defect. With as-is clauses, you waive that right. However, if you fail to disclose a known defect or a hidden defect that you know about, or you represent to the buyer that the property has a quality that it does not have, then you can be then held liable, and that as-is clause kind of goes out of the window. So it's a tough burden to prove if you're the buyer that the owner knew or should have known with respect to defects. You know, a lot of houses that we come across, of course, come in the form of a succession, right? So right. You know, I might be the executor who's going to sign that act of sale, and there's a dispensation clause kind of thing where you kind of dispense from having to fill out that clause if you didn't live in the home. Look, my parents lived in the home for 50 years, but I don't know if there are any defects. So I'm just the heir. I'm just going to sign off on it, whatever. But if you're selling a home, then you have a duty to, if you know of something that is a defective condition, you need to tell it. So what happens at, you know, it's again, it's a very hard burden to prove if you're the buyer that they knew or should have known. One of the things that we have been doing a lot of, and you know, it's getting a little farther removed since Katrina, but a lot of people, you know, you hear on the radio, let me show you how to flip a house. Let me show you how to do this. Let me show you how to do that. And people are in the flipping business, right? Well, what they do is they get in there, they have no license. They represent to the parish or the authority that's granting the permits that they are the owner of the house and they plan to live there. And when in fact they don't, they plan on, you know, buying it and flipping it. And so when you misrepresent, when you misrepresent that you are a licensed contractor or that you had a licensed contract to do the renovations, then you can be held liable. The other way you're held liable is if you go do the renovations yourself. So there is something in the law that says if you are presumed to know of the defect, if you are the manufacturer of the thing, and the courts have extended that to mean if you're a contractor or not a contractor and you built, either way, and you built it or you did have something to do with the defective condition, then you're presumed to know of the defect because you did it. So you have to be very careful when you are a person flipping houses
and hiring, you know, day laborers from, you know, the local retail, I mean, the big box, you know, Lowe's and Home Depot stores, or you're hiring people that are not licensed. And then all of a sudden, or if you're doing the work yourself, which a lot of people, you know, they go work the nights and the weekends, or even that's their full-time job, and they're not licensed. There are criminal penalties for that, and if there are, we can pierce your company veil, so you lose your LLC protection. So there's a lot of landmines in that business. And, you know, you're talking $200,000-$300,000 usually for these types of homes, sometimes more.
All right.
So it's a big, big risk and big investment. You just need to be very careful when you decide to go that route. Best thing to do is go get a license or go get a home improvement certificate with the state, and that will give you the proper licensure to go ahead and do that work. And then if in fact you hire someone, you know, they have to be a licensed plumber, electrician, et cetera.
Okay, let's go to phone lines. Let's go to Ken. He's got a question regarding our real estate question. Hey, Ken, you on all things legal with Doug Sinceri and Albert Nico. Ken.
Hey, Doug. I recently bought a house about a year ago, and there was defects in the floor that started showing up about 4 months later that we noticed, and it was spotting in the floor. So we got in touch with some floor guys, had them dug up, and noticed it's a humidity problem in it. The proper barriers weren't installed, and we were under an as-is contract. So I have talked to a couple of lawyers. They told me he's responsible for the negligence, and I heard you mention it in your previous discussion, but is that the floors that he completely remodeled the house, would the floors fall under his negligence? And if so, would we be able to recover any type of lawyer fee?
All right, Albert, that's yours.
So with retribution, it's if you can establish that they knew or should have known, all of a sudden that puts them in bad faith. And when they're in bad faith, yes, you can recover your legal fees and your costs, et cetera, for doing that. I'm seeing this more and more. Actually, I've got a couple of them in the file cabinet right now where same type of deal. Guy wasn't licensed, just flipped a house. I think he hired a licensed electrician or a licensed plumber or something because they had to file the permits for those things. But everything else, I think he did himself or had, you know, his buddies do or just hired some laborers to do. One of the problems when you have a slab floor is that there's a vapor barrier issue, and you have to prep that floor properly. You can't just go down with some sort of mastic and put down the wood floors right on top of it, because the vapor barrier, the slabs are porous, and moisture will wick up through the slab. And so there are products that are a vapor barrier and you know, an adhesive, for lack of a better word, that they can put down, but there is a process on the technical data sheet for doing that. And if they fail to do that, then they install them negligently, and it's a defective condition of the floors. And they would be responsible for it depending on what happened. Okay, so this was a renovation that you purchased?
Yes, sir. And we actually had the floors pulled up, and we sent it off to the floor distributor, who sent it off to the glue people who are doing the analysis right now. So I'm waiting on the report. Okay. But everybody I've talked to said the right trowel wasn't used. It wasn't right in proper application, and the floors came up so easily that it was clear that something was done incorrectly. So,
exactly. Yeah, and a lot of times right need now to look at the floor. Yeah, because they're, you know, sometimes they even recommend kind of grinding down the concrete, which you never see people do, grinding it down to where it's kind of a rough surface, like an initially poured concrete surface, you know, has that kind of rough surface, and then putting this vapor barrier adhesive on top of that, and then putting your floors down, and you won't have a problem. But a lot of times people will just leave the whatever adhesive was still on the floor when they pull the floors up, whatever they were, the old floors. And that's not a good surface. It's typically not a vapor barrier to protect the moisture wicking up through the slab from the ground. And, so you just got to, you know, you've got to stay with it. And ideally, if you could get one of the manufacturer's reps, probably from the adhesive company, to come look at the floors and inspect the floors you know, the existing slab portion to establish that they were not properly prepped prior to the installation. That would help kind of nail things down.
There you go.
Appreciate
all right. Give us a call at 837-1304. Give Albert a call on that one. He's got a little Paul LaGrange in him also, too. So a lot of Paul LaGrange, which is Saturday morning home improvement show on WWL. So let's give us a break. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, you weekend lawyers. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. Hey, we're back. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers. You can call us at a law firm also at 504-837-1304 or North Shore 95-624-9697. You call us law question, or if you got an LSU question, I'll answer those. They have, just real quick, hadn't talked much about LSU. We just referred to them a little bit, but LSU has added Vandy and Missouri to their schedule. They're playing a 10-game SEC schedule and getting rid of the non-conference games, which is awesome in the sense that losing the four games, this is probably the most
It's not awesome for the non-conference teams, though, right?
No. It's bad for Coach Rebo over at Nicholls State. I know he was looking forward to playing at Tiger Stadium, and it's a nice little reward for them because they have done a fantastic job, and they're going to have him back soon, hopefully. But in the midst of, you know, the NCAA, in fact, the MAC has canceled this football season, which is
– Yeah, I just saw that.
And, you know, I think these academics or these academic administrators just have a different view of the world than the rest of us. And so I'm sorry for those kids who don't get to play this year. And, you know, again, in doing the research, you have 10 times more of a chance of dying of alcohol poisoning than you would COVID if you're on a college campus and you're a college student. It's just sort of an interesting statistic. So just hate to see them lose the season over this, you know. But, you know, I'm glad we didn't get Georgia as our extra game, and good for that. And this is just a little sports trivia, and this is just personal to me. The Chicago Cubs played their first night game on August 9th of 1988 against the New York Mets, and they won 6-4. And that was significant because when I was in college, we used to schedule our class around the Chicago Cubs. So they'd play at 1:30, 1:35. So we would make sure we'd have no classes so we could come home and watch our adopted home team at the time, Chicago Cubs. So there you go. We're talking a little bit about real estate. You know, one of the with the baby boomers coming of age and, passing property down to their children, we're finding that a lot of children have co-ownership in the properties, and they don't want to be co-owners with their siblings anymore. And, you know, succession was done. They put them in co-ownership, maybe, you know, three or four siblings, and then they come to us and say, hey, I don't live in the property. My sister or brother's living in the property. I don't benefit by it. But, you know, they're getting the person living in there is getting 100% of the benefit. They're only getting 20, but they only own 25% of it. You have some remedies as far as, you know, a partition, you know, petitioning in court to split up the property and either have the, one of the parties buy it out or, you know, have it sold.
And you know, there is a new statute, Doug, under the partition articles.
Yes.
That before, the statute basically said that unless co-owners all agree otherwise, that it would go up for sheriff sale. And, usually the co-owners, unless it was just really a bitter, nasty, contested, you know, personal thing, they would usually say, no, we all agree that we're going to put it up for private sale, meaning they would get a real estate agent, try to sell it for market value as opposed to having the sheriff sell it at sheriff sale. But this last legislative session, they did add a provision, say, that the court could order a private sale.
Yes.
And they give you the parameters for that. And so
in a private sale. And that's what I was about to say. The judge used to twist arms to do a private sale in those type of situations, but it makes it official. And twisting arms in a very good way. So I don't mean it disrespectfully, but move it.
To get people to realize that, you know, everybody's going to lose money if you decide to go sheriff sale.
Yeah, because sheriff, I mean, you use. I mean, a sheriff's sale.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, a sheriff's sale, you usually get – you're not going to get as much money at a sheriff's sale than a private sale.
Well, what it would happen is it would benefit the person with the most money, right? So
right.
You got the sibling that's out there, you know, made his fortune, and then you've got the other sibling who's living in the house because they can't afford to do anything else. Hey, we want to go to sheriff's sale, and I'm going to show up at the sheriff's sale. So I own 50% of the house, and you own 50% of the house. So my 50% is, you know, if I just pay myself back, so I'm right away, I can offer 50% of the house, I would get half, you would get half. And so I'm going to make money on it. And so I can bid the property up because 50% of the proceeds are going to come to me. So if there's someone else at the sheriff's sale that really wants the property, even though they want to pay 75% of its value, it still doesn't matter because I'm still getting 50% of that money. I only got to come up with a smaller portion. So it would behoove them to go to a sheriff's sale and essentially take the property from their siblings.
On the cheap value of it. Yeah. All right. Let's go to phone lines. Let's go to Dan. Got a question regarding an act of sale. Hey, Dan, man, how are you doing, man?
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Now, I don't have it. We do the broadcast at home now. So, because we're socially.
Would you mind if I put you on speaker then? Because I can't hear you at all.
Well, here's the deal. I don't have my dump button. So if you don't say any dirty jokes or anything, like you have a tendency to do at times, because I don't have control.
No, like I'm not the dirty Dan.
You're not the dirty Dan. All right. We got the Sunday morning Dan, the sanctified Dan. All right.
And I haven't been to church in 6 months. I'm self-quarantined.
You're self-quarantined. I give you, in the name of somebody, I give you absolution.
Thank you.
On WWL. In the name of WWL and all things, you have absolution, and you're okay. You're still going to heaven.
So Dan, are you at least watching Mass on television?
I don't have to watch it on television. I live across the street from the church.
Okay. You can watch it.
I didn't say if you were watching church. I said, were you watching Mass?
I can see Mass from my house. I live right across the street.
We're going to have to get a ruling from the Vatican as to whether watching the church from your window is a checkoff on weekly Mass for under COVID. So there you go. What you got, Dan?
Listen, I know you guys. You're not going to go to the Pope. You're going to go to LSU to get this.
Anyway,
to tell you one more story about the church. They were giving confessions outside the other day, and my front porch, and, you know, holler. Yeah. I told my wife, I'm going to go outside and go to confession. You think they'll listen to me if I yell across the street, let them yell my stuff back?
Well, you might scare your neighbors.
They may make me move. Huh? Listen, I'm getting ready to sell a lot.
A lot of for sale signs will pop up, right?
That's right.
Listen, I'm getting ready to sell a lot of things, Lacombe. So it's not in my area here. And what I want to know is this. I haven't sold anything in years, but, you know, I buy a lot of stuff. Do I have to let you guys look at my agreement to purchase and so forth? And do I go to his attorney for the closing or my attorney for the closing? Do I pay for the closing or does he pay for the closing? It's an all-cash deal.
All right.
Typically the buyer would select the title attorney and the closing attorney because they want to make sure that a title search is done, that an abstract is done, that there are no liens on the property, that you're the proper owner of the property selling it to them. So they're typically going to go to their own title attorney to make sure that that's all done. There are very standard charges that are paid by the seller, by the buyer. That the title attorney will put in there. Not a bad idea to get somebody to take a look at your purchase agreement. Actually, the Board of Realtors has one online that you can look up, and it's pretty good. And you just make sure everything's filled out.
Why can't I come to you guys?
You can. Either way.
And do I get one of them free
coupons,
notary tickets. If I
come, you get a coupon. Plus, I'll do your confession too. Bless you, Dan, for you have sinned, and you can tell me all your sins since your last confession, and I'll set aside 4 or 5 hours for you. All right,
you'll need it.
let's go to a break. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. Hey, we're back. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, you weekend lawyers. Got a text on our Facebook feed. It says, it's from Pat. If a person dies and has money owed to the IRS and bills made before death, who is responsible for those charges and bills? And that's pretty straightforward, is the succession. The succession, if you accept the succession. Now, one of the things you can do with a lot of credit card billing and debt is credit card companies are very open to negotiating out debt for a succession, because there's a little expense on trying to collect it. And a lot of times, if you can get with the credit card companies and say, hey, so-and-so's died, they owe, you know, debt of X, a lot of times they'll negotiate out maybe for a percentage of the entire debt. And that's possibly, depending on the size of the IRS debt, that might be a possibility also.
Exactly, be afraid, you know, ask. All they can tell you is no.
You're not going to be in any worse position you were before asking. The worst thing they can say is say no, which is, you know, worse for wear for that. So thank you, Pat, for the text. All right, so we're, I guess we'll have not a lot. I guess we'll get some reports about the Saints as far as, you know, who's doing what, for the next week. Really sort of strange deal.
I know you probably know the answer to this. You mentioned how LSU now has two new SEC teams on their roster for a 10-game season. Is there going to be some sort of playoff or anything like that, or is it too early to tell?
I think it's too early to tell. I think the SEC has one.
I mean, even among the SEC, you know?
I think they'll have the SEC championship for sure. So I think we'll have the regular championship. It's sort of unpredictable because SEC has one view of football. They're going to play football, even if it's, you know, I'm not sure that
it's the South.
It's the South. That's what I'm saying. All the from the People's Republic of, you know, California and the Northeast, they're probably more inclined not to play football this year. And even if they don't, I think there's a good chance that, SEC football will be played, whether they have crowds or not, or to what extent. But they're going to play because we are the South. The South is about God, family, football, and hard work. Is that accurate?
I throw country in there too.
Country. That's what I'm saying. God, country, family, football, and hard work. That's why we live in the South. So God bless that. All right, well, that's a wrap on all things legal. Thank you, Albert. And we'll be back next week on all things legal. So have a great and blessed week. See you next week.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.